Can't see a thing. I wonder how many of us saw the partial, very partial eclipse on Wednesday. I saw a tiny little bite and then it disappeared behind a tree. Here in Woodingdean, I imagine because you're higher up, you were able to have a fairly good view of it. Those of us who are old enough to remember 1999, I was teaching students at the Olivet School and we decamped down to the beach on the 11th of August 1999. It was sort of mid-morning and I think most of Brighton and Hove were on the beach that day. And it got darker and darker. It wasn't a complete total eclipse, but it was almost. A friend went to Cornwall to see it, where it was total, and didn't see it. We saw it, and it was amazing because the birds thought that it was nighttime, and it all went quiet, and it was just eerie. And then suddenly the sun began to appear again, and the birds went doolally. They went crazy thinking that was a short night. And they started to think it was the dawn and made a right noise. Imagine seagulls making all that racket. It was a wonderful communal occasion. We were told, were we not, to go to a high place in order to be able to see it this time. But a far greater experience was, I can't think of the word really, was experience, let's say, on a mountain. Three people with Jesus went up a mountain. And it says, after six days, Jesus took with him Peter, James, and John, the brother of James, and led them up a high mountain by themselves. And there he was transfigured before them. His face shone like the sun. His clothes became as white as light. That's far more spectacular than an eclipse. I'm sorry to say, but it was. Just imagine being there. And just then, there appeared before them Moses and Elijah, talking with Jesus. And Peter, dear old Peter, said to Jesus, "Lord, it is good for us to be here, and if you wish, I will put up three shelters, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." And while he was speaking, a bright cloud enveloped them, and a voice from the cloud said, "This is my son, whom I love. With him I am well pleased. Listen to him." That's Matthew chapter 17, verses 1 to 5. What a fantastic experience. These two colossal figures in the Old Testament, Moses representing the law and Elijah representing the prophets. And it's interesting, isn't it, that the Old Testament actually finishes with them. In Malachi chapter 4, it says, "Remember the law of my servant Moses, the decrees and laws I gave him at Horeb for all Israel. See, I will send you the prophet Elijah before the great and dreadful day of the Lord comes." So the Old Testament ends with both Moses and Elijah. And the New Testament begins with John the Baptist, who was likened to Elijah. If we were to write a biography, a biography of Elijah, I wonder what the title would be. The man who changed the weather? The man who sat under a tree? Elijah, a great man of God? No, not a great man of God, but a man of a great God. He was a very ordinary person like you and me. There was nothing special about him, but God did great things through him because he surrendered his life to him. Not a superman, but a man who could do supernatural things for God. What do we know about this man, Elijah? We know a lot about Moses, don't we? Where he came from, his parents, his tribe, everything. But there is enough in the first verse that Maria read to us to tell us a lot about him. 1 Kings 17, verse 1. Now Elijah, the Tishbite from Tishbe in Gilead. He came from Gilead. When I returned from Peru, I went to work at the Olivet Language School, and we knew from where those students came from a little bit about the students, just because of where they came from. If they came from the Bernese Oberland, or the Andes in Peru, or Paris, or Japan, we would know a certain amount about them already. Gilead was over on the other side of the River Jordan. It was a mountainous, rocky, rugged, wild country. It was windswept. The trees were bent over, and they were very small. It was a harsh life. It was very, very different from the coastal area where King Ahab had his capital, Samaria. Ahab was the king of Israel, but he'd allowed his wife, Jezebel, to influence him. And he built a massive temple to Baal. And the people began to worship Baal rather than the true God. But Elijah would go down to that capital city to meet Ahab. So here he was, wild, tough, rugged mountain man. Remember, John the Baptist was described in Luke chapter 7. Jesus began to speak to the crowd about John. What did you go out into the desert to see? A reed swayed by the wind? No, John was a strong, rugged man. No wonder people thought John the Baptist was Elijah come back. John chapter 1, it says that the priests and the Levites were worried, and they were sent to ask John the Baptist, "Who are you? Are you Elijah?" He said, "I am not." So Elijah came from Gilead. We've already got a picture of him. He came from Tishbe. Tishbe was a settlement of people, not nomads, but a pioneering community. These people were famous because they wore long camel hair, black camel hair clothes next to the skin, and they would have been quite smelly. In fact, very smelly. John the Baptist was described in Mark chapter 1. John wore clothing made of camel's hair with a belt round his waist, and he ate locusts and wild honey, just like Elijah. No wonder they thought he was Elijah come back. So he came from Gilead. He came from Tishbe. And his name, Elijah, El and Yah, two names of God, God and his name. In the midst of all that Baal worship, his parents were not afraid to show the people around about that they believed in God, because they gave their son his name. So he came from Gilead. He came from Tishbe. We know his name, a name which says that he is a child of God. And this is the man that God chose to use, a rough, tough mountain man from a God-fearing family. Imagine the scene now. This countryman, in his rough, smelly camel coat, walks and walks and walks over the Jordan down to the coast, 30 miles or so, 50K. And he arrives at the city of Samaria, tired, dirty, smelly. Not the best approach to the palace. My next door neighbour, now with the Lord, well, I don't know whether she's with the Lord or not. She proclaimed that she was an atheist, but I think she was the Lord's from the past. She went to a garden party. Wow. She dressed up and she had the hat, the lot. You do not turn up at the palace in dirty old clothes. I don't think I'd be accepted in my trainers. But somehow or other, despite the reaction, which no doubt came from the palace guards, he got inside. And he walked up to the king and he preached the shortest sermon in the Bible. As the Lord, the God of Israel, lives, whom I serve, or before whom I stand, there will be neither dew nor rain except at my word. As the Lord, the God of Israel, lives, whom I serve, or before whom I stand, there will be neither dew nor rain except at my word. And he turned round and he walked out. And from that moment on, he was in hiding, and Ahab hunted him for all those years. Bob, if you could put up the next PowerPoint. So what was this sermon? Well, the foundation of the sermon was this: as the Lord, the God of Israel, lives. As the Lord, the God of Israel, lives. You see, my God, said Elijah, my God is alive, not dead like yours. My God is alive. And the fearlessness of the sermon, it says, whom I serve, or can be translated, before whom I stand. Whom I serve, before whom I stand. He stood before God. He had no need to fear the king or anyone else. And he stood boldly and he stood fearlessly before this king. When I was at Bible college, a group of us went to Dublin on something called Irish Treks. There was no trekking involved. I believe, if I remember rightly, there were another little group from Moreland Bible College where Malcolm used to go. He was not one of them. We would go out two by two with members of Grace Baptist Church in Dublin. We would knock on doors. We would walk up to people in the street. We would go up to people in the park and share the gospel. It was terrifying. I hated every moment. It wasn't me, and I found it absolutely horrendous. For a young Christian, I was only about 4 or 5 years old as a Christian. One morning, I was so terrified, I stayed in bed. I refused to go out that day because I was so frightened. Elijah stood before God. He was not afraid of anyone. I was at that time. The fearlessness of the sermon. The forecast of the sermon. Elijah said there will be neither dew nor rain in the next few years. There will be neither dew nor rain in the next few years. Israel, as you know, is at the east end of the Mediterranean Sea, part of the Fertile Crescent. If you know your geography from the past, the westerly winds from the sea brought rain and heavy dew as they blew in from the sea over Israel, and that brought plenty of food and prosperity. If the wind turned round and blew from the east, it was a dry Sirocco wind from Asia, and it brought drought and famine and disease. Elijah knew that God could turn the wind round and bring those problems to Israel. How did he know? How did he know? In Deuteronomy chapter 11, 16 and 17, it says this. Be careful. Be careful, or you will be enticed away and worship other gods and bow down to them. Wasn't that what King Ahab and the people were doing? They turned to Baal and to iconic worship. Then, the scripture says, then the Lord's anger will burn against you, and he will shut the heavens so that it will not rain, and the ground will yield no produce, and you will soon perish from the good land the Lord is giving you. The way that Ahab and the people had turned to other gods brought about the inevitable result of their disobedience. And Elijah was facing them with the reality of the Word of God. So we have the foundation of the sermon, the fearlessness of the sermon, the forecast of the sermon, and now the faith of the sermon. Accept at my word. Accept at my word. Elijah had had the faith to believe what God said and the courage to speak it out, even though it meant that the people were going to suffer terribly from famine and death. But he also had the faith to believe that he, Elijah, would be the one to say when it was going to end. And the rest of the story, for 3.5 years, there was no rain. And Elijah was on the run for all that time from King Ahab. But now, after 3.5 years, God tells him, go back, go and speak to King Ahab. It would take great courage, of course. And Elijah said to Ahab, I can hear rain. Even though the sky was blue and not a cloud in sight. A bit like the days we've been having recently until today. Not a cloud in sight. And he's told his servant to watch the sky to the west, over the sea, over the Mediterranean, where the wet westerly winds would come from. And the servant went and he said, sorry, sky's blue, not a cloud in sight. And he went back again and again, no clouds. No clouds. And on the seventh time, he came back and he said, yes, there's a tiny cloud the size of a fist. And the rain came so suddenly, and it came torrentially. As we heard, Elijah had to tuck up his camel hair coat and run ahead of the rain. What an amazing man. But really, he wasn't at all. He was just ordinary. But he gave his life to God. And he became a man of a great God. We can look around the world today and we can see Christians both past and present doing great things for God. Think of the ministry of Billy Graham in the past. C.T. Studd, that great missionary. William Carey, who I believe started the Baptist Missionary Society. Hudson Taylor called to China on Brighton Beach. Nicky Gumbel in more recent times, who started that great movement of Alpha. And in our own churches. But they'd all be the first to say that they're not great at all. just men and women of a great God. I want to tell you the story of Najwa. Najwa was a Brazilian student that I taught. She'd been a drug addict and was converted on the streets of Rio or Sao Paulo, I'm not sure which. Every morning, as I was teaching overseas students, I would take a newspaper into school, into the class. We would look at the weather in the various places where they came from, and we'd talk about the news. If the Olympic Games were on, we would talk about that. One day, Najwa saw a picture in the newspaper, and she said, "Who's that? Who's that person?" Because she said, I've dreamt about that man. And I've been called to that country. And it was the president of Albania, which at that time in the mid-80s was closed, completely closed. But she said, God has called me there. Eventually, she went to Kosovo, where there was a sizable Albanian community. And she learned the language of Kosovo and also Albanian. And she wrote out the scriptures by hand on pieces of paper. And once in a while, she would pop over the border. Great courage. And the Lord did amazing things that he always brought her into contact with Christians. And she was able to give different Christians bits of the scriptures on these handwritten pieces of paper. She knew she was watched. But she went, and she came back, and she went, and she came back. And eventually, we know that Albania opened up. And BMS went to work there. Najwa went to work there, went to live and to work in that country, planting churches, working in connection with the Baptist Missionary Society, though not a member of it. One day she did go to see the president, not that president, the new president of that country, and said, you know, the only answer to your family's, your country's problems is Jesus Christ. She had the courage to go and speak to him. Sadly, Najwa died in COVID. She's with the Lord. She was not a great woman by any means. Not a great woman, but she was a woman of a great God. A woman of a great God. So what? There's that challenging couple of words again. So what? What does this say to you and to me? It is so simple. God can use us whoever we are, whatever we look like, whether we are young or older or in between, whether we are able-bodied or we are disabled, whether we are visually impaired or whether we are sighted, whether we are black, brown, white, male or female. How dare we say that God can't use us, or that we can never be a great man or woman or child of God? How dare we? Because that's not the point, is it? The point is that it is God who is great and not us. I know an elderly, disabled lady who lives alone, known to some of us, and she spends most of her day praying. Many would call her a great prayer warrior, but she'd be the last person to say that she's great. She's a very humble woman. But she knows she's not great, but she knows that she has a great God who answers prayer. We too can be men, women, and children of a great God. We can do things, great things for him. We can speak great things for him because of his greatness and not ours. May people we meet and have dealings with day by day see our great God and not us. We're going to sing finally. It's 483 for those who are online. Restore, O Lord, the honor of your name. In works of sovereign power, come shake the earth again.